kind of like the vault in Raiders of the Lost Ark, if you remember that old movie uh-huh. where they wheel the Ark of the Covenant into a storage facility, but it's much brighter.
Yes.
Lots of cool things in it, just like that other place does. So this room was specially constructed to house natural history collections, and we have a variety of types of collections in here. We have insects, we have plants, and we have vertebrates, and we have parasites. And they're prepared in a bunch of different ways. We have pinned insects, pressed plants, study skins for vertebrates, and microscope slides for parasites. And everything is in special cabinets. And the insects have a double layer of protection. The cabinets are designed to keep out light and pests, and the room is temperature and humidity controlled.
What are we looking at here? These are very tiny.
These are little parasitic wasps. So these would be things that attack caterpillars or flies, things like that. And you can see they're either pinned directly through the body or they're on little points of paper. And the thing that makes it a research collection is that each of these specimens has locality information telling you where and when and by whom it was collected.
So how does something get into the collection?
Well, a variety of ways. I can go out and collect things. Faculty go out and collect things. This collection was historic in some ways in that it was built up by other faculty members at the university even prior to my time here. We continually get things in. I get to pick through the students' collections when entomology is taught, and then we occasionally get donations in from private individuals who can't keep their collection anymore. And these are some butterflies.
What type of butterflies?
These are mourning cloak butterflies.
So it's all the same species in
yes,
this
Yes, this is all the same species. And we keep multiple representatives of each individual, so it's not really like a stamp collection where you have one of each, because people who decide how to name species and if something is a new species need to compare variation. And they need to sort out the variation that occurs between the sexes or occurs geographically into units that represent a natural biological species. So if you had just one or a couple specimens, you wouldn't be able to do that. So we try to get geographic representation as well as different sexes. Sometimes the two sexes can look very different and you wouldn't even recognize them as the same species. In many cases, they've been described as different species until someone comes along and takes a more careful look or observes them carefully in nature. And you can see there's some here that don't have labels on them, and those we just keep for instructional purposes. I can show you some of the ones that I work on.
Absolutely. Cool.
So I'm taking you down the aisle now that has the true bugs in it. So all bugs are insects, but technically not all insects are bugs.
Oh.
I have to say that.
What makes a bug a bug?
Well, a certain combination of antennae and mouth parts and wings. Those are the main things that characterize the largest group, which is the order of insects. So I'll show you some of these. These are the seed bugs, and I work on some related to the ones in this drawer. This is a pretty common Connecticut species. It's kind of cute. It's got a long neck.
Yeah, it is kind of cute. They almost look like anteaters, like with the long neck.
Yeah, and in the tropics, their necks get even longer. These feed on seeds, so they have the potential to impact plant reproduction and plant dispersal. But you can see they're kind of small. I've named a couple of species.
How does that happen?
Well, first you have to recognize it as a new species, which involves a careful study and comparison of other specimens in the collection, and then you can narrow it down and use all kinds of evidence. You can even use genetic evidence, DNA. So here's some things with bright red labels on them, which means they're the type specimens. Here's the one that I described. And as far as I know, I only had two specimens when I described it. People always ask me what my favorite insect is, and it's hard, but if I'm really pressed, I'll probably pick this one because I got to name it, but I also collected it. Museum scientists often name things that are in the collection that other people collected, but this one I was able to collect.
Well,
in
Ecuador, you got that one?
That's named after my former major advisor.
Okay.
Who described the genus. And then I recognized that it was a species in that genus, but I knew all the other species in that genus, and I knew it wasn't one of them, so I named it after him. Parademia slateri.
What do scientists do with what's here in the collections?
Well, they look at these specimens to determine the ranges of species, to describe new species, to come up with evolutionary scenarios for the relationship between the different types of insects and how they've changed over time.
Do we have a large collection compared to
now? No, but just the fact that we have a collection is special. A lot of places have gotten rid of their collections as quote-unquote modern biology has taken over. Not that there's anything wrong with that. The techniques that they can use to understand different systems are fantastic, but also those new techniques can in a lot of ways be used on these specimens too. And people get further and further away from organisms. And to understand an organism in its environment is a whole different thing than to try to understand the workings of a cell. These specimens have an awful lot to tell us. The new genetic techniques that are coming out, you can do micro CT scans and look at these things in three dimensions without having to dissect them. So we keep specimens because new tools are constantly being invented, new ways of understanding them. We tell students all the time that every specimen has a story to tell. We just have to be smart enough to figure out how to get that story out from the specimen. And then when you think that each species interacts with other species, probably the best example of that is the army ant guest collection that we're working on now, where one species of army ant is essential for the existence of hundreds of other species. You start to appreciate the interrelationships of nature. And the other thing I think that is really important is you see these things in three dimensions.
Yeah.
You immediately get a sense of size and shape, and you just don't get that from an electronic device where everything is two-dimensional, everything's bright colors, everything's the same size, essentially, and you lose something there. It separates you a little bit further from the organism. Part of what we teach in the Introduction to Natural History Collections course is threats to collections, mm-hmm. and this whole facility was designed basically to minimize threats. Just like an art museum has certain characteristics right. to preserve art, we applied the standards for natural history collections to this building. These are the organisms that share the planet with us. Natural history collections preserve our natural heritage. I think people relate a little easier to things that preserve our cultural heritage, mm-hmm. like art museums and libraries. And this is analogous to that in the broad sense. It's our relationship to the natural world, which is becoming more and more tenuous mm-hmm. as time goes on.
The last thing I wanted to ask you is how you came to study bugs.
I knew I liked biology, but in my generation, you became a nurse or maybe you became a doctor, and there weren't that many role models out there for people who wanted to do this kind of work. And I didn't even know I wanted to do this kind of work. We didn't make collections in grammar school like they do now. They often say, oh, you know, go out and make an insect collection. No, I wasn't a childhood entomologist. I took entomology in college. I was sitting in a lecture hall next to somebody, and we were talking about what courses we were going to sign up for next semester. And it was between comparative vertebrate anatomy and entomology. And I think he took comparative anatomy, and I took entomology. And then that summer, I didn't want to go home and work in the gun factory again. So I went around and I knocked on every professor's door, and an entomologist on the faculty, Slater, who ended up being my major advisor in grad school, because I was here as an undergraduate as well, said, well, yeah, I have money. Have you had entomology? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, I have. I just took it. So I went to work for him for a couple summers, and then I started grad school. I thought, well, you know, this is kind of fun, because I was doing the same kind of thing for him on a much smaller scale with his collection. And I thought, well, you know, if he could do it, I could do it. I was going to stop at a master's degree, but then I kept going, and I got my job here as a graduate student, so I've never left.
Nothing wrong with that. I left very briefly and came back, so.
Well, I don't know. I think people now have bigger aspirations.
Yeah, this is pretty cool.
I still pinch myself every time I come to work. It's like, it's
pretty amazing.
We had a small, tiny room, and now we have this, and it's fun when I bring people who have never seen a collection in, and they walk into that dry room, and sometimes their jaw literally mm-hmm. drops.